Thanks for coming back. Here it is, part two.
Hello, my legendary friends. This is Legends and Losers, the show for those who want to create a legendary life and a legendary business, hosted by Christopher Lockhead, a legend in marketing, pioneer in category design, and co-author of Play Bigger, who can recite much of The Big Lebowski, but can't remember his wife's phone number, with Colin Vincent, born with a camera in his hand, snowboard on his feet, and co-founder of Equity Directory. And now, strap yourselves in, it's time for Legends and Losers.
So let's talk about that, guys, because it's a big transition point, particularly for physical location kind of retail businesses, to how do you scale? That
right.
You hear this all the time, that the sales numbers are different when the founders are in the store.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys have created what I would argue is an artisan business with a very high-end customer service experience. And you're not there.
Right.
So how do you do that?
Training.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we are there. We're just not at the stores, if that's what you mean.
Yeah.
How do you be there but not be there? That's.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I mean, training.
Hiring and training.
It's hiring and training, 100%. Yeah.
And then because it's what that ultimately is culture. And so we got lucky. But you know, developing a really strong culture early on, which we had, we kind of had always this, you know, kind of cult family vibe going on of people wanting to win.
Ooh.
And attracted great people.
Yeah.
But we also, since day one, always had like a really rigorous onboarding training system that a lot of people thought was overkill. I mean, you have to take a test, score 90% or better. People get five, you know, people.
What's on the test?
Well, you know, it's just questions. It's like, it's been, I'm not sure, I have to look to see where it is today, but it's been up to 10 pages, all like no multiple choice, all fill in the blank, short answer, 90% or better, you don't work here. You know, we'd have, back in the days, but it was like, you know, 5 days of training for 6 years, 7 years. I led every single orientation for every employee that ever worked for us for like 6, 7 years straight. Nonstop.
This is not barista training. This is like pre-hire.
This is so you want to like run our register. This is what you have to do.
Yeah.
You're not going to be on an espresso machine for like till 3 months later, at least 3 to 6 months later. So this is so you want to run a register at Verve. This is what we're talking about. I mean, bringing people on firing people during orientation, sending people home, sending whole classes home when they come back the second day and didn't study at all. Just like really caring so much and wanting people to care so much that it became, I think, a little bit infectious. And was this foundation that we ended up building our company on?
You know, it's interesting because on so many Legends and Losers, we've had discussions about culture and dialogue about values and leadership. And this is stuff that I think to a lot of people can sound like airy-fairy, HR-y bullshit.
Yeah.
But, you know, we recently had on Chris Fussell, and he's partners with General Stanley McChrystal. They've written two books together. Fussell's new book just came out. And I had this aha in our discussion, and the aha went like this. McChrystal had the balls to go to Obama and say, everything we're doing to fight this war is wrong and we need to do something different. And the aha was, the enemy isn't a command and control enemy. The enemy is a network that communicates, and it's got this nodes, and it's also like a flash network. It shows up and then it disappears. So I was thinking about that. It's like, what McChrystal and Fussell and those guys figured out was you had to have a fighting organization that was a network that could sort of pop up in the right places at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Mike Maples, the legendary VC, on. And he said the future of the economy is different, which is the old paradigm was only a certain number of bananas grow every year. and there's whatever the demand is for bananas. And if you're a banana supplier, your job is to capture a limited amount of demand for a limited amount of product. And if you manage that well, you'll do well. And if you don't, you won't. But it's really about capturing your unfair share part of scarcity. And historically, we used a command and control structure to do that. And then what Maple says is the future is networks, because networks create abundance. And then what Fussell and McChrystal say about that in a business context is, how do you have, on one hand, a centralized organization with a clear one, what Fussell's book's called, one mission, and everybody's highly, highly trained, but at the same time, they act as independent yet coordinated nodes with a lot of authority at the front line to do whatever is required. And the aha for me was, in both cases, whether it's Maples or Fussell, they say it's information and networks and the speed of information through networks that's sort of created that dynamic. And so I guess that leads me to a question, which is, it's so strange for me when I go to a verb that the experience is so similar at each location, and yet there's different people there and you're not in any of those locations. So how have you created, on one hand, such a culture, such a clear way of delivering a consistent, high-end, artisan experience without being there? In other words, this new kind of networked model where people on the front lines are empowered.
Well, I think to tie into the military analogy, you know, it's like, it's the most, I was talking to our Mike Iyer, who's like our kind of third partner, who was our CFO for 9 years, our CEO now. But we were talking about how, you know, the people in the military that have the most perceived freedom, I'm not in the military, so I can't speak for it, but, you know, are the people that are the most well-trained. Like, everyone talks about like SEAL Team 6 or this or that, and, you know, black ops and get to wear beards and do whatever, but they're like the most trained. So they get the freedom and the training and go hand in hand. And so I think trying to have our team be as trained as possible, but part of that training and the expectations is part of the expectation is autonomy and empowerment. So we just had a meeting about this just to make sure it's, you know, still loud and clear, is that, you know, well, one, if there's a problem, you know, the first person that you should ask if you can solve it is yourself. We expect that of you. Like, we don't want you to just say, I have a problem, fix it. We want you to say, no, first person I ask is, can I fix this?
So if the toilet's overflowing,
person you ask, can I fix it, is me, which is an expectation, but it's also an empowerment. They go hand in hand. And also that idea of, we empower the team with what we call, we've got your back decision-making, which is when something happens, you have to make that decision and you're wondering if you're qualified enough to make it. You just have to think, well, I've got their back. What would I do? So kid spills a drink. Am I empowered to buy them a drink? Well, I've got their back. So what do you do? Well, of course, kid spills a drink, I'm going to get them a drink. And this idea that people are, we have a lot of like steps of service. We have a lot of operational systems, but at the end of the day, we want to have it feel organic, and we tell people we don't hire robots, and we don't hire like the yes people. We want to hire people that can be critical thinkers and make decisions on their own and MacGyver and want to, and that's the expectation, is like, you're expected.
Know who MacGyver was?
Well, I think because it just came back and there's like a reissue of it. So I think we're good. No, but yeah, just that idea that I want to walk in our stores and feel like people feel empowered and that they feel confident because they were really well trained in how to do their job, so they can be what we call normal. Like, our service standard at Verve is called just be normal. That's what we tell people. Like, don't be a certain way, just be normal. But like,
Huh?
Yeah.
So what do you mean by be normal?
Like, be yourself.
Like, what, you know?
Yeah. Like this podcast.
Like a dialogue.
Yeah.
Just be normal. And so hopefully through hiring the right people, you filter what that will look like in your cafe, and then empowering people. And I think a lot of the reason, at least in our business, setting the expectation that like customer service is important and customers are important. But I think a lot of the times people can come off as pretentious, or yes, in coffee places, things like that, mm-hmm, is from a lack of confidence, not from too much. And so we want the right people to feel really confident that they're really good at their job. And if they're nice people and are really well trained and can be confident in their job, they're going to give the best service.
It's interesting you say that, because it would be easy as a customer to think, well, Verve's too cool for me.
Sure. Yeah.
The other one I've been dying to ask you guys is, you've had so much success. It reminds me of that old, for fuck's sakes, Yogi Berra quote, where he says, that place is so busy, no one goes there anymore. You know, like the line at Verve, particularly around, yeah, sort of more peak coffee times, just looks insane sometimes, sure, a lot of the time, right? It's, yeah, like, so how do you guys deal with that? I mean, you build this business in the beginning, of course, the fear is anybody going to even drink this fucking shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
which was real.
Sure.
For a while.
And then the problem flips 180, which is, holy shit. I can remember driving by your first location, looking at it going, are those fucks giving out money? And so how do you deal with scaling an artisan business kind of beyond the training?
Well, I think it's the same. It's a similar thing where our whole business is like this dichotomy. Maybe it actually comes back to what Ryan was saying, the secrets of truth and secrets of wealth. So we're, you know, an artisan company, and Ryan and I so solemnly swear to never fuck around with quality, and that we would like never go cheap on anything that had to do with quality ever. We like, and that's never come up since the day we made that promise. And it probably never would have, even if we hadn't made the promise. But at the same time, we're like, you know, we're not oblivious, and we get metrics every single day of every single one of our cafes, and we talk about them, and it's super important. And we track ticket times, and we look at customer averages, and we read through everything. And we are doing whatever we can to solve those friction points. So like in our new store, or a newly remodeled store, we added a second register. We added a second steam wand, looking at the choke points. Those were the places where we choked out, was the ability to steam milk and the ability to have people just actually even place their order. We've done floating regs. I mean, it's only 1,000 feet, you know, and it cranks. So, but we do, that's the only way we can really manage that is, again, through training, and then really looking at the data all the time and tracking it to just see where we can make those improvements in the numbers we see, you know, through that lens as well.
And if we tilt a little, it's obvious in this dialogue who the introvert is and who the extrovert is.
Right.
So Ryan, maybe I'm curious to unpack a little bit about your relationship with Colby. I mean, partnerships are hard.
True.
Bromances from college over rock, yeah, and roll and old keyboards turning into businesses. Is it a big transition? So tell me a little bit about your partnership with Colby.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I was going to mention in response to your question about culture.
Yeah.
I was listening to, I think it was, yeah, it was, I can't remember the guy's name, Joe Rogan's maybe last one or two podcasts. He had a guest on who was talking about small group, like human behavior in small groups. Particularly like, you know, 30, 40 people, and overcoming adversity as a group and how powerful that is. And that's really what gives people meaning. And, I think going back to, you know, the early days of Verve, you know, we were just faced with like every challenge there is, basically. So, you know, there was, if it was going to fall apart, it was going to fall apart in 2007 or 8. And we met those, you know, we had those times for sure. But I think once...
I mean, were there times where you thought the two of you weren't going to make it as partners or friends or as a business or all of the above?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
So there were times where you thought your friendship was in jeopardy.
I mean, it was less about he and I as much as it was about just the reality of, you know, was the business performing? Could it support what we were trying to pull off? Were people going to give a shit and never come here?
I mean, to do... You should keep rolling on this, but like... We opened in November 19th, went into the holidays. Some people came. We thought it was kind of cool. We worked Christmas together, which was the start of us never closing our stores. We work, they're always open on holidays, everything for the people. And it's all volunteer shifts and they're always filled. But
So on Thanksgiving or Christmas, what happens?
We never close our stores. And we put up, you know, volunteer shifts. So we're not going to make you work Christmas. We put up anyone want to work Christmas and people always volunteer for it. Part half days, they can still go kick with their family, but it's fun. You know, kids make great tips. People bring pies, but
it's fun to work those.
It's fun to work, but it's also really fun to be open for the people because people are so stoked you're open. So, you know, the first Christmas we came to after we opened, Ryan and I were like, are we going to be open? We had two employees. They were gone. We're like, you know, that was also that moment of like, well, how much do we really give a shit about this business? So much. We're doing so great that we can just close. Or do we like, how all in are we?
Yeah.
And we worked at just the two of us and got destroyed. And they built that culture.
How many lattes did you make?
Dude, so many.
We got so destroyed. Yeah. So we thought we were on this roll, and then January hit, crickets, all January. I mean, we were doing like $200 days, which isn't enough to run a business on. In case anybody was wondering out there in rapid growth technology. I mean, February, no one coming, and just I wanted to mention this to illustrate a point about the hardships of to sit there and. I mean, we were sitting in the middle of a cafe. I remember Indian style drinking Samuel Adams from Costco that we referred to as the Boston latte and
in a paper cup
and hadn't seen one customer for like 6 hours. We're just sitting there, like staring at each other, thinking like, what the fuck have we done? And to have to sit there and work that open at 6 a.m. all the way to that close at 10 p.m. at that time. Roast the coffee by yourselves and not see customers was something that we never have forgotten, and actually how we ended up building our entire service model.
So how did that change your service model?
I kind of digressed this, but let's talk about that.
There's all kinds of digressions around here.
Well, there was, I mean, the notion that like anybody that came by the store, like at any point, if somebody walked by, like a human being was like within eyesight of where we were standing.
Right.
They needed to be reached out to.
They needed to come in our store and not leave our store and buy something.
Like, because people would poke in and like look around and be like, this is out of place. Like, the fuck are you guys doing? And then leave.
Would you give them like a free coffee or what would you do?
We would do anything.
We would say hi.
We would greet them and look them in the eye and say, hey, what's going on, man? Cruise in.
And then they would come up.
Check it out. We'll tell you what we're doing and make you a weird coffee drink that you've never had before and just get you to talk about it to your friend or family or whatever. Yeah.
So, where did the whiskey latte come from? This is the question I've been dying to ask. It's my favorite.
It's my fantastic, favorite. Huh?
You didn't ask, but I'm going to tell you. Is the almond milk, because I don't drink cow's milk anymore.
Ooh.
Almond milk, double shot, whiskey, Verve latte.
Ooh.
That makes me fucking happy right
there. It's a fantastic drink.
It's a happy drink.
What's in that drink? Why do I like that so much?
Well, that came from, because there's whiskey in it.
That's why you like it, Chris.
It's very Legends and Losers of you.
Yeah. You know the ice creamery, the Penny Ice Creamery, obviously? Yeah.
Yeah, the legendary Penny Ice Creamery in Santa Cruz.
Very legendary. Kendra. Sorry.
Yeah, guys. So.
Ex-Manarisa, ex-Tartine.
She's incredible.
She's badass.
She chefed up the whiskey syrup.
She makes it for us.
She makes whiskey syrup.
From Bullet yes. Bourbon.
So she, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There you have
That's
it.
That's why I like it so much.
Yeah.
Yep.
And she's amazing, right? Penny Ice Creamery.
Yeah.
Assembly downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Assembly's become one of my top five restaurants in Santa mm-hmm. Cruz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Picnic Basket.
Great sandwiches, right?
Yeah.
And she's another one of those that handful of people that did something in Santa Cruz that people thought, what the fuck are you doing?
Good. Incredible.
$4 yeah. ice cream. And you know, but she's ex Manresa, you know, where we get our baked goods over the Hill Manresa restaurant, 3 Michelin starred David Kinch.
Is that where you get your baked goods?
Yeah.
Cause holy shit. Those, monkey breads.
Yeah.
It's messed up.
I have nieces and nephews, right? And that's crack for a 12-year-old right there, never mind an adult.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen people fight over the last piece in a very unrespectful way.
There's a lot of realness in those pastries. Manresa,
yeah,
3 Michelin starred as of this year, started a baking arm. The girl who runs the baking arm worked for us as a barista while she worked for Manresa.
How great.
Lives in Santa Cruz. Their whole crew mostly lives in Santa Cruz. David Kinch, the chef, lives in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. Kendra from the Penny used to work there after she left Tartine, where she worked. So there's like this secret, you know, little secret pool of people here.
Now, you guys have been legendary at that. This is something that... I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs about, which is if you want to build your category and your brand, one of the things you do is who you associate with.
Yeah.
And so from the very beginning, you associate with another premier artisan brand in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, you get distribution in Whole Foods. And now you're at Facebook and a bunch of the other kind of very serious high-end Silicon Valley cafeterias, right?
Sure.
Yeah. GoPro, Netflix, eBay. We've been at Cisco. We were at Google, Airbnb, yeah. Dropbox, Salesforce, Evernote.
Wow. That's a list.
Facebook.
Yeah. So we're...
Did you guys from the beginning have a strategy of like, I want to only associate with very serious ding-dong great brands? Or how did that happen that whether it's your suppliers like Penny mm-hmm. or Manresa, or whether it's a lot of your customers, Whole Foods, Facebook, Google, et cetera. I mean, you've become the artisan coffee in Silicon Valley.
That's true.
Yeah.
And that's a very serious achievement.
That's actually weirdly one of the things I'm most proud of that we've done. But
yeah,
I think it came out of, and Ryan can speak to kind of more what happened, but I think that the twofold is one out of wanting to associate with great brands and feeling like people like us do things like this and the kinship and feeling like we belong, like, ooh. Hey, like we belong together, you know, like we're a 98% match, you know, let's do this. And then also out of fear of like the other side, which is like the most fucked up world of wholesale coffee and serving weird, shitty accounts that ruin your brand and that just take all your time. And that to Ryan and I is actually the greatest nightmare of all in this entire coffee experience is that happening to our brand. So out of fear of that and also the excitement of brand alignment, I mean, we started it off.
I have a sense for how hard that world is. My brother-in-law, Michael, is in that world. He's a senior sales guy in the food service business. And my nephew, Jason, is a chef at one of the high-end ding-dong corporate chef companies. And he runs one of the bigger kitchens in Silicon Valley. And I know how price sensitive those guys are.
Yeah.
Right. Those corporate cafeteria type environments are very margin, very numbers oriented. And they're quality oriented too.
Sure.
But as high quality as you guys are, it'd be a lot cheaper for them to do Starbucks or Pete's, I gotta believe, right?
Sure.
So how do you, in a world of those giant category kings, convince the category kings of Silicon Valley that Verb is the choice?
Well, it's really coming up through, I mean, our sales team is great, but it's also coming up from their employees. I mean, that's, those people go to our store in San Francisco. They're, you know, they're in Santa Cruz. They're not far from here. They're going to the stores here. They understand what Third Wave Coffee is. And then they go to work.
And how it's different.
And they have to drink shitty coffee. Every single one of them just tells the chef or their boss or whoever, like, we gotta ditch this coffee and do something about it. Yeah.
Even if they have, you know, I mean, pizza's good coffee. And I just use them as an example because they probably don't have, like, I don't know what you consider shit, you know, instant,
yeah,
Taster's Choice,
Nescafe.
Or something. Nescafe. Yeah. They probably are a level above that. Are they not? Or are they not?
No, they're level. I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but yeah, for the most part, you know, Pete's, that type of thing. Yeah.
And so, given that they don't have shit, they're not in the sort of Nescafe world, you're a big step up price-wise, I gotta believe, right?
Yeah.
And I hear this all the time from entrepreneurs. Oh, they believe in their product and they think they should have a premium price, but the category says kind of fuck you. Mm. How have you been able to hold verb pricing when you're going into these massive cafeteria work environments?
Well, we have, there's a few different things that happen in those environments. One is they have, you know, their big batch brewing, like free coffee or, you know, super subsidized coffee for like everybody to just drink black coffee. And then there's the espresso bars and the more like, you know, maybe you pay to play type of thing. And so what we'll do is, you know, depending on the environment, we'll strike a deal where, you know, maybe we can help them out with the, you know, on this side, but then on, you know, the other side, we're going to, you know, they're going to have to pay for it. We also do a lot of like events and whatnot. So we'll show up with, we'll show up with our Sprinter, but as it is now, we'll show up
and show up with your what?
We just bought, yeah. When's this airing, by the way? We don't know.
It's sometimes.
This will air whenever you want it.
What is today and yeah. Current now?
We
can air this after you announce whatever the fuck it is.
No, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal, but we just bought an events Sprinter. It's like, you know, fully like roof rack, sweet tires. It's got a coffee bar inside of it. We can roll up to, you know, wherever.
So you now have the rolling verb.
Yeah.
Well, and I think too, when in some of the, getting on these campuses is like, it's a hearts and minds campaign all the way. And some of them, it's literally hearts and minds. Like they decide that they want to upgrade their coffee program. I think it's also like preferred place to work, you know, preferred employer is, you know, having like a good coffee program. Yeah. Again, more and more the expectation that it's just like people are expecting better coffee. And, but then even once a place, an account, you know, some sort of campus decides, you know what, we're going to step our coffee up. Who should we choose? A lot of times it goes to like, it sounds, this is some like, you know, like once upon a time in the West shit here, but it's like, you know, guns in the streets taste and off, like you have yeah. a taste off and like everyone shows up and brings coffee and everyone comes and tastes it. And then the whole campus votes. And yeah, we've won like one of our more recent campuses, you know, that's how we got there was just, we were chosen for however people decide to vote, whether it's because they really loved our coffee and or the brand and whatever experience. But
so for all my talk about category, make no mistake, having a great product matters. And like, hey, the dogs ate the food.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt.
Yeah. So leading with a great product.
Sure.
The other thing, you guys have been incredibly innovative with your branding. What you've done both with the in-store experience, with all of the merchandise, with the photography books, which by the way are very fucking cool, thank you. Everything, the coffee cups that you sell, everything, you feel like a, fashion's not the right word, but you feel like a fashion brand with a very clear point of view and sense of identity with all of the things you do from a branding perspective, and yet you're a coffee company.
Ooh.
So how is it that your branding is really quite legendary and sort of, I want to collect Verve t-shirts, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. Unpack that a little bit for me.
Well, I think, you know, he and I have always dug like really cool collateral and nice printing and that type of thing. And then, you know, likewise, we've been into brands like, you know, we talk about Sierra Nevada or Patagonia or, you know, cool surf brands and that type of thing. So if you were to look at like the coffee history of merchandise and apparel and design, it's pretty tacky. And so along with the third wave, you know, the cafe design element, which is, you know, a big part of our brand identity, we wanted to carry that through to, you know, collateral for our wholesale customers, takeaways for the retail store customer. And so really we just got inspired by, you know, other cool brands that are, that were doing cool shit at the time or even now. So,
I mean, there are a lot of clothing brands that don't have the eye, the aesthetic, and the point of view of Verve.
They should probably step their game up.
Yeah. Seriously.
No, thanks. No, I mean, we like Ryan said though, we're like, there are a couple of coffee brands that, you know, when we started off, you know, we looked towards, but after we kicked off, most of our influence has always come from other types of brands and other types of markets. So yeah, like the Patagonias and Sierra Nevada and yeah, these other types of companies and brands. And I guess we always wanted our brand to be an experience and not just a product.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we've always kind of thought of ourselves that way since the beginning, which was like, you know, risk taking, like to have to make merchandise when no one made merchandise and to make like t-shirts when no one made t-shirts in a surf community where like O'Neill is founded in Santa Cruz, independent, and to not look like total kooks.
We had to battle through just like resistance with,
yeah,
our staff and, you know, people at the time were like, what the fuck? Why are we ordering?
Why are we selling,
like,
t-shirts?
Yeah. Why are we
about to place a $3,000 order in for t-shirts when we're doing $600 a day?
Yeah.
But it was just an important part of the brand exercise.
And how well have those t-shirts and coffee cups and all the other Verve branded stuff sold?
Well, it's all sold great. It's in all a relatively small percentage of our sales, but it's more around just the brand value and
brand experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's beautiful stuff. And it's a stroke of genius. And it shows up on your Instagram feed. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is the artist in you guys, and I know you're both into photography as well, shows up in the marketing, the branding, the design on the top of my latte art, and the experience that I have in the store.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. This is probably cheesy, right? Saying this stuff on like in a world where you have so many like tech listeners, but you know, obviously one of our biggest influences was always Apple was one of them, for better or worse, but just that idea of the idea that design is important. So if nothing else, I think, you know, that's one thing we, you know, besides the phone in my pocket, or it's not in my pocket, but to take from the man, but is that just, I respect that like design is important and that it's not important. You know, we won some architectural awards. We won an award in architectural record, and it was Good Design is Good Business. And, you know, they're one of the most world renowned architecture magazines in the world. We submitted our roastery and our Pac Ave cafe after we built it, just like kind of for fun. And we totally won. And it was us and Starbucks. And they won.
Yeah, guys.
And they won. They won for their container stores and we won for ours. But I believe that. I believe good design is good business, and that you should give a shit about design and experience and those aesthetics as part of the whole package. And, you know, you shouldn't think, oh, that's that cutesy shit, but really it's about this. I think that's totally important. It's how people perceive things before they use them. It's how people remember things. It's part of the emotion. It's part of the memory. It's so.
But who would have thought you could apply that to a coffee business? That, to me, is the genius of what you're saying. Mm. You know, the other thing I want to unpack with you guys is neither one of you is the CEO of Verve, and one of you was for a while. So
we were.
We were co-CEOs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what happened?
And then all, no, I just can't. Nothing. And then what we decided to do was, you know, Ryan and I, we founded the company and we've been, I mean, we didn't have a business. We didn't have an operating agreement when we started, handshake deal, the whole, you know, the whole thing. It could have really gone sideways, but fortunately it didn't because we're just normal.
A lot of people get unnormal fast.
Yeah. Yeah. So we eventually slipped into the operating agreement and all that. And, it was totally cool. But, and we have our, you know, kind of our third business partner, operating partner, Mike Iyer, who is our CEO now. He's been with us. We've been together doing this project for like 11 years. And Mike's been with us since the year after we opened. So like 9 of those years, he's been with us grinding out.
And he originally came in as
Batman, Midnight, CFO.
He was like a phone call away from my best friend growing up is Mike's brother-in-law. So I called, knowing that Mike was the CFO, I called my buddy Justin when we were like just getting destroyed on 41st Avenue to get in touch with Mike, be like, dude, save, we need help. Get Mike over here.
Not to help figure out what to do with the company and all that was in our hands, but to more like get all of the boxes of mail and the banking and the P&L and to get all that tuned up and up to speed and the stuff that like small business owner nightmares 101 is just to help us with all that. And he more than helped, you know, Mike, he's not here, but like, you know, he has his MBA. He's a CPA. He went to Brigham Young. He's super brilliant. And he's worked in New York, did all the stuff. He was the CFO of a company over the hill, moonlighted with us just because he's cool like that. And then slowly over time.
Yeah.
And what made came on you board. Get to a place where you guys said, we need to not be the CEO anymore. Together, we need to hand this to Mike.
Well, this was like, you know, going back a few years before Mike, we'd recognized that, which is just that, you know, there's a sweet spot for us to operate in, and it's not in the minutia of CEO land, which, you know, I suppose if you're a good CEO, you shouldn't be in the minutia anyway, right? But the point is there was an aspect of our business that we loved dealing with, coffee, store design, photography, marketing,
brand,
all the brand related stuff. And we really just needed help executing on it all, you know, getting some of these ideas into fruition. And so, you know, Mike, as Colby mentioned, super talented, really administrative, great leadership qualities. It was kind of a no brainer.
And we wanted to have like that idea of like one voice for the company. I know certain companies like Google and Whole Foods have had really great success with the dual CEO or kind of like dual leadership role. I think we did too with our crew. But we're just getting to that point where, because we are scaling and we are in multiple markets and there's so much going on, just to have clear communication, we wanted to, have there be one voice. And we thought it could be great to have it be Mike, because he's he has his MBA, he's a tactician, and it could free Ryan and I up to focus on steering and really thinking about new products and the category and where we want to go and keep the intuition light bright.
It's interesting because in the world that I grew up in Silicon Valley, when that happens, the unspoken truth, the vast majority of the time is the founders couldn't scale. And so they're getting pushed aside for real management.
Ooh.
And oftentimes when that happens, they're very marginalized and they're in some bullshit. They get some bullshit title role. And the reality is they're not really around much anymore. And they kind of get shoved to the side. Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound at all like what's happening here.
No.
So how do you get to a place where you know, candidly, guys, your egos are strong enough where you say, you know what? There's this other individual in the company, Colby, to your point, we want to speak with one voice, not two, or maybe even three, where Mike was at that point in your relationship with him. And so we want him to be the CEO, and we want to focus on marketing, product, store selection and experience, and whatever other things. That's a big thing for a lot of founders to give up and not feel like you guys almost seem like you're more committed to the company since you gave up the CEO role.
Ooh.
So help me with how that's all played out when more often than not, it's a big step back for the founder or founders.
Well, it was a big step. And I think, you know, one of our mentors, Richard Novak of Santa Cruz fame, Santa Cruz Skates, Surf, NHS, Independent.
He's one of the biggest legends in Santa Cruz, right?
We talked to him and he said it was the hardest thing he ever had to do. The hardest thing he ever had to learn to do in his company was to let someone else have that responsibility. But he was really the one of the people who talking to us as a mentor saying, you know, there's a light on the other side of this that's going to, you know, enhance you guys personally and enhance the brand in a way that you can't see right now. And I have to give definitely big shout out to Richard for,
yeah, no doubt,
for sort of like being a guy who's been there, done that, who is super independent as F and is not, you know, no pushover, and to know that it wasn't a guy who quote couldn't cut it, but that there's this, you know, more offensive reason to do it, not as a step back sort of defensive move.
And so there's a lot I'd love to unpack here, but maybe the first one is, so today out of the three of you two plus Mike, divide and conquer, or what are the roles?
Well, it depends on the day.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I think we certainly, anything that has to do with the aesthetic of the brand, location, products, the website, essentially anything.
Avocado bread.
Sure. Yeah. All that stuff. You know, who, one of us will take on if there's a need.
So if it's product, marketing, or store selection and experience, mm-hmm, one of the two of you or both of you are on it?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah.
And really it's been that with Mike and Ryan and I, you know, we manage the company collectively. So the three, we used to have what we called the two-headed dragon, which was Ryan and I. And then we were worried that we were gonna have the three-headed dragon. Well, we just want a one-headed dragon. So there's a three-headed dragon. It's at Verve, but we try to keep it a lid on it. You know, it's like its vault is just Ryan, Mike, and Colby have to deal with the three-headed dragon. But there's something to that push and pull that I think has been really healthy and fuels the fire for Verve and the brand, which is these different opinions and, you know, come together. So, you know, Mike is the CEO and he's the person who has direct reports below him and he runs day to day and he's got a lot of shit going on. And he, you know, knows when to pull Ryan and I in and allows us to be freed up on independent projects. Director of coffee reports to Mike, but I'm a coffee buyer and, you know, I'm still all the way 100% involved in coffee. And Ryan with roasting as well, and any new products. So, you know, we that's where the line is that Mike's in charge and then we as a team still, you know, sort of have to divide and conquer projects and also kind of areas of the business amongst the three of us above that all.
And was it hard for you to back off and let Mike be the final decision?
No, because it doesn't really feel like he, I mean, okay, theoretically, yes. And in some cases, yes. But for the most part, you know, Mike's, again, you know, he's been with us for however many years, 9 years, 8 years.
Yeah.
He's a partner.
So he doesn't feel any different to you guys than you two feel different.
Exactly. Yeah. He knows that anything related to, you know, the brand direction, you know, market insight, any of that kind of stuff is going to come from us. And we know that anything related to you know, metrics and accounting and just general, you know, acumen is going to come from Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. We have that like mutual respect there, which is what we had before he became the CEO anyway.
Sure. Yeah.
And he wants to win, and he knows that he's going to increase his odds that having Colby and Ryan involved in like is having, you know, a little bit of magic dust on the side to like have insight and a point of view on the industry and our brand and where we fit and where it's going and where it's been. You know, we've never taken our foot off that pedal. So he wants to use that. I think where it could have gotten weird, and maybe where it's gotten weird in the past or for other, where it could get weird is if we all have egos, Ryan and I, Mike, of course, we want to win, we're competitive, but Ryan mentioned this to me a while back, but you know, there's never been a point in time, even as much as we bicker about stuff, it's always for the brand. But he said, he's like, he had said to me one time that I never felt that your ego was ever, it was ever, I was ever fighting your ego for you. And that what you were fighting me against was because of just your personal ego and not because of the brand. So that's where we can like the dust settles, where yes, we come passionate. Yes, we have strong opinions, but we all believe, at least with the three of us, that it's about the brand and not about just a personal ego.
Yeah.
And that's where it can just be cool.
Yeah. Well, it's a real testament to all three of you, because partnerships are way hard, as I don't know if I can tell you.
Sure.
And as sort of the co-CEOs and the founders who built the first store and made the first lattes and did all the stuff that you did, to then step back, even with somebody as seminal as Mike has been, it's still a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then for him, you know, a lot of incoming CEOs fuck up with founders. They sort of, in their desire to sort of exert their CEO-ness, they kind of push them to the side too much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very clear that all three of you have found a relationship and a cadence and a communication style. It's a very powerful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you can see that line and, yeah, I mean, yeah, we've seen like what the other side could look like and realize what we don't want in our company.
Oh fuck. Yeah.
I mean,
it can be terrible.
It can get ugly. Yeah. It can get ugly fast.
For no real good reason either. You know?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Dumb shit. Yeah.
For the wrong reasons, you could just fuck it all up.
Yeah. And it would blow the company to shreds. But, you know, it seems like the opposite's happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal.
And then on the personal side, I mean, you guys have lives and families. And tell me what it's like to be young men, you know, trying to do what you're doing in your life outside of Verve, mm-hmm. but at the same time being consumed by this mission to build this amazing company in this new category, this third wave.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I hit it up.
You know Amy and Max and Evelyn. Yeah. So I'm, I have two kids, 5 and 3, Max and Evelyn, my wife, Amy.
And they're so great, all of them.
Yeah, they are.
And you're, take this the way I mean it, you're all so fucking cute together. Like, you have the cutest kids ever.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
And it's your true. Gal is...
Yeah, she's amazing.
A+.
Well, she helped us. I mean, so for perspective, when we were building our first store, mm-hmm. we lived in a little, you know, converted chicken shack in Capitola Village. And Colby and I were both, so Colby was crashing the couch. We had a dude helping us do some mill work. He was living in our second bedroom. And Colby was crashing the couch during the whole build out. Of which Amy helped like dig the plumbing.
Were you married at that time?
No. So her dad
almost never got married because of it.
Her dad helped us lay the tile. Amy literally dug the plumbing ditch at 41st Avenue. There was a period of time from when we started that build out to after we opened, where I didn't even know her friends because we were so 16 hours, 18 hours a day.
Yeah. I slept on his couch for a year.
Wow.
But
which is true.
You know, so I hate to interrupt you, and I want you to keep going.
Yeah.
When I listen to this, especially knowing how successful you guys have been and the people you've surrounded yourself with and the customers you have today and the accolades you have. I think a lot of people underestimate what it takes to be Ryan and Colby. Right? Like, you guys fucking did the work to the point, if I use Novak as an example, where you got one of the most successful and the most recognizable Santa Cruz / surf industry pioneers, innovators, entrepreneurs, and I would call category designers to invest and come on your board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you go from a couple of dudes playing keyboards and swinging a hammer, scraping and scrounging to open your first location, to you're the coffee at Facebook and Google, and like the who's who of Santa Cruz are supporting and investing in you. It's an incredible journey.
Yeah.
No, but you had to be willing to sleep on couches and swing hammers and do all that and get your girlfriend at the time, Amy, to fucking chip in and do all that stuff, right?
For sure.
Yeah. So anyway, take us. Yeah. No. Take me back to Amy swinging hammers.
Yeah. Well, she basically, I mean, on her teacher salary, supported Colby and I for a year or so.
She was paying the bills.
Paid the rent, bought the groceries.
There's nothing coming out of the business. I mean, everything went right back in at that time. Cause we were also growing our wholesale business from a pretty early start. Roasting.
How soon did you realize that selling to other retailers or other coffee shops would matter?
It was within three months, we had our first wholesale customer.
It was part of our model to begin with.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but we had to get ahead of, I mean, not to mention that was also during some of the worst economic times.
Yeah, we opened in like basically 2007. So 2008, we kind of kicked off.
2008 and 2009 were nuclear winters.
Those were our first 2 years in business.
You know, that's interesting. One of the things we talk about in Play Bigger, the book, is, and we don't have data necessarily, but there's something uncanny about entrepreneurs that start in downturns.
Ooh. I mean, I think we had it in us to begin with, but man, definitely like the fight and the desire to win. And that point where you decide, do I quit? And when you decide not to, from there forward was like, all we saw was like, let's fucking do this. We're going to, like, you can't touch us. Get away from me. You will not stop me. Nothing will stop me. The credit card people that I owe will not stop me. No one will stop us. In the beginning, you know, it was like, are you willing to risk everything? There's that moment, you know, and you say, yeah, chips all in, and you can't pull the chips back, you know?
The other thing I love about you guys, we live in a world where, you know, we post something on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and we look 5 seconds later to see what the reaction has been. And so there's this instant gratification world that we're living in. What I love about you guys is, what year did you found Verve?
2007.
The very end.
Yeah.
Yeah. November 2007.
And you guys were scraping and scrounging, fair to say, failed musicians.
Sure.
Too harsh?
Nah.
That's fair.
Fair? I'm one too, if it helps. Yeah.
That's a fair statement.
With no college degrees, no education running a major brand, never mind retail restaurant business. And so, kind of with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
College dropouts, nothing. Shittiest economy in modern American history. And here we are today, 9 locations.
Yeah.
How many employees?
Almost 200.
200, yeah.
And you have people coming from Japan who proactively identify you as the preeminent category king in this new high-end niche of coffee. So much so, they invite you to come to Tokyo. And so I guess my point is, isn't it amazing? We live in a world where we all get addicted to this sort of near-term reaction. And like one of my favorite quotes from Bill Gates is, people underestimate the impact of a technology in the long term and overestimate it in the short term. Anyway, I guess what I'm saying, guys, is I love that you've played the long game.
Ooh. Mm. Definitely been a long play, for sure.
Yeah. For sure.
I fucking love that you've just come from fucking nothing in a category like coffee and fucking crushed it.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
No, really. Like, fucking A, guys. You know, you guys have stayed so true to your vision, and you've played the long game, and you've been willing to sleep on couches. And I don't know what your W-2 is, but I'm guessing it's probably not 10 million a year each.
It's not $10 million a year each.
Yeah. Right? You're putting a giant amount back in that business, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's still, the long play is still playing out, man.
Yeah. The chips
are still on the table.
Yeah. All in.
So how do you think about the future? I know you've got a lot of, people who want to play with you guys, people mm-hmm. want to invest with you yeah. guys, people who want to open franchise. Like, you get fucking phone calls today that 10 years ago you couldn't have imagined, right?
For sure.
That's for sure.
So, yeah. So unpack how you think about the future for me.
Well, specifically just, because this is your podcast, the tech world, I think that
a lot of people outside the tech world.
It's true. But yeah, okay. Specifically,
fair enough.
Your background.
Yeah, we're the, I know that's not quote your... unquote, Silicon Valley, the podcast Silicon Valley needs, according to my dear friend, Sabrina Horn.
I do think we'll see, the technology, intervention, if you will, at the retail store level. The things you talked about, you drive by the store and there's 900 people in line on Saturday morning. I think the future is in retail, certainly in technology solutions. But Colby mentioned this earlier. It's weird. I mean, we never could have imagined the space shape up the way that it has. The third wave coffee go from what we thought were like, cool bands, and there's six of them, to like thousands in mainstream, and now Starbucks has their reserve roasteries and the whole thing.
The analogy to that, keep going, is we talked about when we were in college how like indie music just came out, and when you wanted to go buy like an indie album, like Arcade Fire or some whatever it was, the Strokes, like you had to go to the indie section, and it was like over past punk, past like electronic, this little small thing of like four rows of CDs called indie. And now that's actually just what like modern rock music is.
That's what music is, right?
So anyway, that's sort of...
Yeah. So we've watched, the oddly, the coffee aspect, or I don't even know, the coffee's attached itself to that indie, if you will, that indie section in the record store. And it's just slowly become, now that's what you expect. But, as we mentioned earlier, a lot of the leaders that were, the few brands that were ahead of us in this space are now, we have a big question mark about, because they're not, the founders are out of the picture anymore, or whatever it is. So
true.
To answer your question about what does it look like, I have no idea.
The interesting thing about that in the technology industry, guys, there are a lot of people who believe, myself included, that when the founders aren't involved, everything changes. And this is not always true, because I've seen it where this is not true, but generally not for the better.
Ooh. I could see that.
Yeah.
Definitely could see that.
Which is so cool about what you guys have created.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're definitely still involved, want to be involved. There's so much, there's so many products Ryan's like a great, he creates all the names for the brands, like all of our blends, all of our language, which, you know, language is important, you know, that Ryan's been really, he has a crazy insight to create language and wording.
The fact that the number one brand is called Street Level,
it's not a coincidence, and it's TM. So we'll step off, everyone. Why is it called Street Level, right?
It's actually a throwback to Italian coffee, man. Street level culture in the Italian in neighborhoods in Italy. It's like what we were talking about earlier about the
with Howard,
the bread oven around the corner.
Oh, right? Yeah.
In espresso culture, there was small walk up street side street level cafes. You walk up, take your espresso shot.
Social enterprises.
Have a quick conversation, you peace out. So that street level, kind of bringing it down to the people, taking the institution out of it, was where the name Street Level was birthed, yeah.
Yeah, there's an authenticity that's kind of unspoken. Right?
Yeah.
And now when we were trying to come up with our coffee buying practice, or what people call, like in our niche world, direct trade, like, people go, we travel all year round going and meeting our farmers personally and seeking and going on adventures to find the next greatest farm. I asked Ryan, I'm like, dude, Ryan, you're the name guy. We got to come up with, what do we call our direct trade practice? He said, farm level. So now our saying is like from farm level to street level. And, you know, we didn't really talk about it, but, you know, because it's not about being better, but, we don't mess around when it comes to getting our products. We're highly competitive at Origin, and we have long lasting relationships of like amazing, unique lots of coffee that, you know, are unique to us. And
you guys have flown around the world and developed personal relationships with farmers,
discovery,
right?
Research.
Yeah.
The whole thing. Yeah. We do it all year round.
Yeah, I mean, you guys go on these trips and you make friends with these folks and you find the people. Look, give me an example of a couple of trips you've done recently to find legendary farmers.
Well, the most recent trip we did, Ryan and I together, was actually kind of a full circle trip where we went to Panama to visit our very first farm level relationship. And it's going to be the basis of our next Farm Level Digest, which is going to be on Panama.
These are your cool photography books.
Yeah, the photography books we're doing. And it's going to have a bunch of stories in it. It's going to have film photography shot by Ryan and I, and a guy who works with us, Parker, as well as a like little video documentary we're working on about the whole trip. And it was cool to go visit these, you know, visit the people we've been working with for 10 years, our very first relationships, and they're, you know, strong as ever. Sometimes it's like that. And then sometimes you go spend 3 weeks in West Africa or East Africa and Western Ethiopia, and, you know, you don't find anything. You come back, you know, you can't get coffee out. Logistics are terrible. You can't get coffee to the port. The lot you think you're going to get isn't the one that shows up. So it's not always a Cinderella story. Sometimes it just sucks, but
sometimes you come back with a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah. But true. It's always an adventure.
Yeah, isn't that true? I had a company once called Always an Adventure. And what are you most excited about for the future, guys?
I mean, we have some cafe and some new expansion stuff on the horizon. And
what's your next true market, Colby? Yeah.
Well, you know, we love the markets we're in, that being Japan, Los Angeles, in the Bay Area, of course, Santa Cruz. So we think there's a lot of, you know, opportunity in those markets. We get asked a lot about the East Coast. We have inquiries from Dubai and all over the world, but we like those markets a lot.
Do you think you do franchises? I mean, I know you get asked.
No.
It's got to be corporate.
It's got to be company
all the way
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not for us to do.
Yeah.
Want that level of control.
Totally. Yeah.
We're opening, the next thing we'll open is a headquarters, like our Santa Cruz roastery here, for our LA stores. So nice. Downtown LA, It's an amazing building. It's like maybe 14,000 square feet. We're sharing it with one of the best chefs in LA, from Bestia, who's opening a restaurant there. It'll be a restaurant concept, some of the retail, and then us will have maybe 5,000 square feet plus or minus.
It'll be like a Southern California headquarters in this killer brick building, which was actually the building that the fight scene to Anchorman was filmed in. So,
well, that makes it fantastic.
Yeah. It's a, that's on the horizon. We haven't really shared this, but I think this is the appropriate place to talk about it. But we haven't gotten shared it publicly, but we'll be doing a cafe at Facebook headquarters, glass box cafe in their new building, designed by Frank Gehry Architects. It's going to be a Verve Rand cafe.
Insane, yeah.
We've been working with them, the architects building it. It's going to be beautiful. It'll open next spring, but we'll have, you know.
So essentially a year from now.
Yeah. We'll be there. And it's something we're really, really excited about, because, you know, Silicon Valley has, there's this weird kinship between Silicon Valley and Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do wholesale to a lot of amazing campuses and accounts over there, but it's going to be really great to actually have to be embedded amongst like the crew there. And to, it's something we're really looking forward to. I think it's going to be a really beautiful cafe.
I just love that two loser musicians who didn't graduate college are now the dominant coffee brand in Silicon Valley. And I say loser with love.
Oh, yeah. That's
we're cool. That's great. Anything else before we kick out of this wave, gentlemen?
I don't have much else. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, man.
Oh, man. I just want to say to you guys, I love you. I love what you're doing. You, the two of you, represent everything that is legendary about entrepreneurship. Because you raise yourself up. And the amazing thing about Verve is every community that you go into, you raise up. And it may sound silly to some, but institutions create communities. And whether that institution is a great education institution or a great local coffee shop, they all matter. And you guys create a sense of connection when you move into a neighborhood that wasn't there before. And I've seen you do it multiple times. So not only are you doing legendary things to raise yourselves up as young men who started from nothing, you make a difference for your employees, and you make a giant difference in your communities. And I just think the two of you are absolutely inspiring. And so I can't thank you enough. I love that you're in my life, and I'm so stoked that you came to hang out today.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks so much, man. It means a lot. We've been quoting you around the office now for years.
Yeah.
And you've been a huge inspiration to myself, Colby, Mike, other people that they probably don't realize that we've channeled our inner lockheads.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's been, yeah, for sure. You've definitely had an effect on us and our whole team. I mean, from violently executing and about being different and just how to pull your head out of the weeds and the gravity of all of that, and to think differently, and to, I don't know, it just, I mean, so much of what you've talked to us about has been really inspirational and helped, you know, shape the way we think at Verve. So awesome that, you know, we feel the same way.
Yeah. Well, I think you guys are everything that's great about entrepreneurship, and you're emblematic. And I hope, actually, I don't hope, I know, are inspiring to others, because you guys are quintessential entrepreneurs. I come from nothing. I see them missing. I get fired up about that. You know, two young guys who come together and with nothing but a dream create a legendary business that is emblematic of an entire new movement. So you guys are fucking awesome. And I can't thank you enough for spending this time with me.
Thanks, man. Chris. Yeah, appreciate it. Yep.
All right.
Whew. There they are. Inspiring and awesome. If there's somebody in your life who you think would love this episode, why not share it with them right now? We got a couple shout outs we'd like to do to Scott and Jessica Atham. Scott and Jessica, I apologize. As a dyslexic, sometimes I don't get to these things perfect. But I got to tell you, the two of you are awesome because we got them Legends and Losers t-shirts, which they look most fabulous in. And they live near a liquor barn. And so they took a photo, Scott and Jessica did, of themselves and their two daughters wearing Legends and Losers t-shirts standing in front of a liquor barn. And if you're a long-term listener, you know how funny I think the liquor barn is. So Scott and Jessica, thank you so much for your legendary picture on our Facebook group. To Vince Silveyer on LinkedIn, thank you for your love note. Really appreciate you reaching out. Ryan Reynes, thank you again for your LinkedIn love note. And Rue Laflamme, awesome tweets, awesome LinkedIn notes. Thank you so much for tuning into Legends and Losers. Also want to tell you about two other events. Number one, I will be with our friends, the venture capital firm Wildcat Ventures, for a special VIP invitation-only event in San Francisco on September the 6th. September the 6th from 5:30 to 8:30. And we'll be having a dialogue called How Legends Design and Dominate Categories with my good friend and a guy who destroyed my net worth and self-worth a little over 20 years ago. a guy named Bruce Cleveland, who's one of the co-founders of Wildcat and a legendary entrepreneur and venture capitalist. We'll be at the Dog Patch Wineworks in San Francisco. To request your VIP invitation for September 6th, email blackhole@legendsandlosers.com. Also want to invite you to the big One Life Fully Lived conference in beautiful Sacramento, California, October 21st. And 22nd, check out onelifefullylived.org for more information. Come to the event and we'll help you dream, plan, and live your best life. Also would like to ask you, check out legendsandlosers.com and subscribe so you never miss any of our good shit. Now, with that, we would like to thank HarperCollins Instant Classic Play Bigger, How Pirates, Dreamers, and Innovators Create and Dominate Markets, Equity Directory, connecting legendary startups to the talent and resources they need to build an amazing business. Our good friends at NetSuite, number one in cloud ERP, come out and see us on the NetSuite Next Ready Business Tour. OneLifeFullyLived.org. Dream, plan, and live your best life. Come see us in Sacramento in October. Spiro, the sales app for salespeople who like to make money. Of course, Verve Coffee, the official coffee of Legends and Losers, leaders in California artisan coffee at vervecoffee.com. Rapid Media, the legendary marketing outcomes you need in Australia at rapidmedia.com.au. Interview Valet, podcast interview marketing. Get on some podcasts and get yourself some business done at interviewvalet.com. Pursuingresults.com. They produce legendary podcasts and they also produce this one. The incredible bestseller and a riveting book called No Barriers from our buddy and friend Eric Weinmeier. He's the guest on episode 47. Check out his new book, No Barriers, A Blind Man's Journey to Kayak the Grand Canyon. The Unbeatable Mind podcast with our friend and guest, the amazing Navy SEAL commander, Mark Devine. Super Consumers, the incredible new book from our friend and guest, Eddie Yoon. Check it out. Eddie's book is amazing. Super Consumers. The World Wildlife Foundation, WWF, because our planet and wildlife matter. And Doctors Without Borders, a.k.a. Médecins Sans Frontières. Make your donation count because we will make it count in the worst places with the most challenging situations on planet Earth. This oddcast is a sole property of the Legends and Losers Oddcast Network, and we would love it if you shared the shit out of it. All rights do remain disturbed. In the event of a water landing, Legends and Losers can be used as a flotation device. We must remind you that this oddcast is produced in a studio that does contain nuts, and Legends and Losers is never tested on GMOs. Got to say thank you to Candy Dandy. Got to ask you to listen to Linkin Park. Remember that Chris Cornell was right. Support your local farmers. Only fart in an elevator of three or more people. Never turn your back on the ocean. Always shower in the nude. And hey, Colin, this podcast really ties the room together, doesn't it? Today, our deepest apologies go out to Greg Clark, CEO of Symantec. Sorry, Greg, we just ran out of time for you. That's it, my friends. Be legendary, and we'll see you again soon on another episode of Legends and Losers.